and Journal. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. In a segment, we're going to play an interview we recorded yesterday with Gary Franchi. And frankly, we were having such a good time talking to each other. We went over the time we were supposed to go. So if you want to see the full interview, we're going to upload it onto X at InfoWars. Make sure you're following at InfoWars. Follow me at Harrison H. Smith. Follow our guest, Gary Franchi, at Gary Franchi. We had a great conversation. We're going to play almost all of it here. But if you want to see the whole thing without commercial breaks, go to X and at InfoWars. And it'll also be on InfoWars.com and band.video. And, of course, Gary Franchi was in town because he was going to Ron Paul's 90th birthday party. I'll be there tomorrow with a whole who's who of, you know, libertarian and liberty-minded individuals. So I'm very excited for that. And I wanted to intro this interview with a clip from Ron Paul just being way ahead of the curve and right about everything. Here is the great man, Ron Paul, from all the way back in the early 2000s. Let's watch.
Madam Speaker, I have a few questions for my colleagues. What if our foreign policy of the past century is deeply flawed and has not served our national security interests? What if we wake up one day and realize that the terrorist threat is a predictable consequence of our meddling in the affairs of others and has nothing to do with us being free and prosperous? What if propping up repressive regimes in the Middle East endangers both the United States and Israel? What if occupying countries like Iraq and Afghanistan and bombing Pakistan is directly related to the hatred directed toward us? What if someday it dawns on us that losing over 5,000 American military personnel in the Middle East since 9/11 is not a fair trade-off for the loss of nearly 3,000 American citizens, no matter how many Iraqi, Pakistani, and Afghan people are killed or displaced? What if we finally decide that torture, even if called enhanced interrogation technique, is self-destructive and produces no useful information, and that contracting it out to a third world nation is just as evil? What if it is finally realized that war and military spending is always destructive to the economy? What if all wartime spending is paid for through the deceitful and evil process of inflating and borrowing? What if we finally see that wartime conditions always undermine personal liberty? What if conservatives who preach small government wake up and realize that our interventionist foreign policy provides the greatest incentive to expand the government? What if conservatives understood once again that their only logical position is to reject military intervention and managing an empire throughout the world? What if the American people woke up and understood that the official reasons for going to war are almost always based on lies and promoted by war propaganda in order to serve special interests? What if we as a nation came to realize that the quest for empire eventually destroys all great nations? What if Obama has no intention of leaving Iraq? What if a military draft is being planned for the wars that will spread if our foreign policy is not changed? What if the American people learn the truth, that our foreign policy has nothing to do with national security, that it never changes from one administration to the next? What if war and preparation for war is a racket serving the special interests? What if President Obama is completely wrong about Afghanistan and turns out worse than Iraq and Vietnam put together? What if Christianity actually teaches peace and not preventive wars of aggression? What if diplomacy is found to be superior to bombs and bribes in protecting America? What happens if my concerns are completely unfounded? Nothing. But what happens if my concerns are justified and ignored? Nothing good. And I yield back the balance of my time.
A monumental and historic speech that we should have listened to. Can you imagine how different the world would be if we had taken that sage advice from Dr. Ron Paul 30 years ago? More on the other side. Interview with Gary Franchi coming up. Don't go anywhere, folks. Share those links. We'll be right back.
You just saw an ad for methylene blue. Tell people the short-term effect and then now the long-term effect.
Yeah, it gives you a good energy boost. I use it before I work out. So if I'm going to be doing kettlebell workouts, like I do some methylene blue about a half hour before. It gives you mental focus. I don't crash afterwards. That's good stuff. I need some more.
How fast did it kick in?
About 15, 20 minutes. I take about a half hour before my workout.
And then you're saying you're almost out of the bottle. Was that 3 weeks ago, a month ago?
Yeah, something like that. You give me the liquid and the pills, too.
You're almost out of both?
Yeah, I'm almost out of both.
Oh, my goodness. Well, all right. I'll give you more. Right. For the audience, we can't give it to everybody. We need your support, thealchemistsword.com. For me personally, the first week I got on it, I actually started to hurt myself because the workouts were so crazy. My trainer goes, dude, what's going on? Like 3 days into it. I go, I don't know.
I like it better than doing like a five-hour energy shot because those will make you crash afterwards. This doesn't have the crash.
So you've had no crash.
Right.
If you'll just try, you'll be hooked, and we can fund the operation. It's a win-win. Now's the time. Get the methylene blue, bare minimum, thealchemistsword.com.
You're listening to The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now at band.video.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The American Journal. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. We're about to go to this interview we did yesterday with Gary Franchi. Again, the full thing, we went a little bit long. The full thing will be uncut, uninterrupted on X at InfoWars. Go follow InfoWars. Share those links at InfoWars. I'm at Harrison H. Smith. Follow Alex at Real Alex Jones. And, of course, support us by going to thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison if you want to let them know who sent you. The Alex Jones Store blowout sale this weekend only. You're getting an additional 20 or 25% off on all hats, shirts, coins, mugs, and hoodies, especially the last chance run of some of these designs out. Once they're sold out, that will be, it'll be gone forever. So don't miss it. Go now, thealexjonesstore.com. Take advantage of the 25% off blowout sale and enjoy this conversation I had with Gary Franchi of Next News Network. Here it is. All right. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The American Journal. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, coming to you live from InfoWars Studios, InfoWars.com/show, joined in studio by Gary Franchi. He is, of course, the founder and chief White House correspondent of Next News Network. You can follow Next News Network on YouTube at Next News Network, and you can follow Gary on X at Gary Franchi. Gary, welcome to the show, sir.
Harrison, it's great to be here. I'm on hallowed ground.
It's great to have you here. It's great to finally meet you in person. I feel like I've been watching Next News Network for 20 years. How long have y'all been around?
Yeah, we've been around for 20 years, yeah, or more. I mean, well, the Next News Network officially started in 2012 in response to the Ron Paul presidential campaign because we ran the Super PAC at the time. There was a lot of momentum behind that. And then, of course, we decided to move that into media production after we saw with the RNC and the media how they treated Congressman Paul.
Right.
And so I'm never going to let that happen again.
Right.
You know, we're going to create a media environment where we can control the narrative, we can correct the narrative, and we can support the candidate that we wanted. And of course, you know, as time went on, that candidate ended up being Donald J. Trump.
Right.
And we got, you know, we had at one point over 70 million views on YouTube, and we were attacked by the mainstream media immediately following the 2016 election. You know, front page of Drudge is blaming us for electing Donald Trump. They changed the entire algorithm
right
at that point because, you know, fake news is running the show.
Yeah.
So we caught them all off guard. We helped elect Trump in 2016. You know, and it's been a minefield ever since.
Yeah, and I was going to say, just the fact y'all are still around. I mean, obviously you deserve it because the quality is so good, but the fact you've survived the various rounds of censorship and deplatforming. Yeah. What's been your, how have you survived this whole time?
Well, basically, you know, sometimes you just got to follow your gut.
Yeah.
And you, with the topics that we cover, you can sort of sense, like when Adam Schiff was threatening talk over vaccines and he was sending letters to YouTube over that. And, you know, we recognized certain narrative assaults that were happening. So we would just preemptively remove content so that we could, you know, maintain the audience. I mean, we have 2.25 million followers now, and you know, it's like the worst feeling in the world of having to remove content from the past because we've covered so many different topics.
Right.
But you know, you had the whole COVID thing, and then you had the election. But we detected early on censorship back in 2015. We'd see videos that would suddenly like lose monetization.
Right.
And it was because ISIS was being mentioned.
Mm.
And but this was all stealth. Eventually YouTube came out and they started to put green dollar signs before a video. You could see that it was monetized. And you know, it's a huge process of understanding, you know, what keywords are triggering things, what you can and cannot say. Because when they're constantly moving the goalposts, you're literally walking through a minefield.
Yeah. Well, and but it's worth it, though, because it that's, like it or not, that's how you reach normies. That's, you know, people are watching YouTube. You have to be on these platforms if you want to reach out to people. Obviously, we tried as hard as we could. You know, they had a bullseye on us, so we had to create our own, you know, off-platform things, which is also necessary. But, you know, why is it so important to you to stay on YouTube? You haven't jumped ship to Rumble yet. I mean, a lot of people are...
Well, we are on Rumble. We do have a following on Rumble.
Sure.
Our X is actually really performing well. But YouTube is where our primary audience is.
Right.
I mean, we've got about 140,000 followers on X. I think we have about 40,000 to 50,000 on Rumble. So, you know, we do, that's our primary audience. So, you know, we want to cater to them. We want to make sure that they receive the message. And, you know, there's always the off time when the algorithm kind of takes a break and pushes us out into like the general population, if you will. So we have to take advantage of every opportunity to get the message out. And, you know, it's effective.
Yeah. Well, it's just amazing to me because, again, I've been watching you guys for so long, and I just think about the sort of trajectory all these different organizations have taken. And there are a lot of channels I used to watch that don't exist anymore. It's amazing that Next News Network is there. But then you think about the fact that you have to be there in the trenches fighting for everything you get. And then you've got these other, you know, networks like the Young Turks that just let us put you on Roku. We're going to put you on the front page. We're going to push you out to everybody. And it's unfair, but you've actually earned your success, which is
something. I should point out that in February of 23, we were officially demonetized by YouTube.
Oh, wow.
And we had to cut like 98% of our staff.
Oh, wow.
We were on life support, but there was a miracle breakthrough when Google whistleblower Zach Voorhees testified in front of the Texas Senate.
Right.
And when he testified, he brought forth documents that he had pulled out 6 years prior that showed how Next News Network was like our channel was listed on internal documents with weighted numbers on how they suppressed the content. So he goes in front of the Texas Senate Committee on State Affairs, and he says, here's the document. These guys are being suppressed. And they say, well, what do we do? And they said, well, he suggests that Google be subpoenaed. What happens next is I decided to, so we find out the committee votes unanimously to subpoena Google, find out what happened. It's all part of this election interference thing. So I decided in like a Hail Mary to bring on the head of the committee onto my YouTube channel and interview him after he had already sent the letter to Google.
Right.
So I say to him, I go, and I'm basically telegraphing, like, okay, what happened? Did they respond? Who responded? Is this now public record? And he said, it is. So whatever they send, whatever Google sends to Texas is public record. So what happens next is I said, well, can I submit a FOIA for those records? He says, yes, you can. So I waited a couple weeks for more data to come into Texas. I hit the FOIA. I get a phone call from the clerk of the Senate, and she says, Mr. Franchi, we just want to clarify what you're asking for. And what I was asking for was any documents that were related to Next News Network, any communications between third parties, government agencies, NGOs, or any other entity that Google or YouTube may have communicated with throughout the process of demonetization. Because we had reapplied six times. We deleted over 30,000 videos. Over a billion views were removed from our channel and to maintain compliance. And so I said, yeah, this is what we want. And she said, just be aware that we do have to notify Google of your request. I said, fine. So my wife and I go off to New York for the Madison Square Garden MAGA rally. And we're after that beautiful event, we're on the way to the airport. And I get a message from the Texas Senate. And they say, yeah, we've notified Google. And then within 24 hours, my channel was remonetized. After.
Well, what do you know?
What do you know? Like, it took the state of Texas, you know, to stand behind Franchi, you know, put a little bit of weight, but that's how we survived that.
Man, that's so, I mean, just the battles that have gone on in the information war. I mean, really having to wrestle free speech out of the hands of these tyrants. It's amazing hearing all these stories and the way it goes back and forth. And, you know, part of me is like, this has helped me understand why perhaps like the hardcore libertarianism of just like the government shouldn't do anything. It's like, no, you need the government for some things. Gary Franchi, the individual, has no ability to fight back against Google. That's why we have the collective power of the government. If it's not stepping in to stop the corporations from oppressing us, it's no better than the government oppressing us, which I sort of want to get into because you're actually here in Texas. You're going down to Ron Paul's 90th birthday party. Obviously, you got started with Ron Paul. So many of us, you know, were introduced to politics through Ron Paul. And, you know, it's just amazing having this guy as this living legend who, you know, helped to not just be a figure for the right, but like actually inform our ideas. And it's always a distinction between the sort of heroes of the left, where you might see some liberal chick wearing a Ruth Bader Ginsburg shirt. She has no idea what Ruth Bader Ginsburg believes. She's never read anything she's written. Whereas Ron Paul, it's like from in the Fed to just the war on drugs, the wars in the Middle East. I mean, his speeches get quoted constantly. His books, you know, helped to, you know, form the foundation of my political beliefs. So it's just amazing having this living legend still around and just appreciating that he's here, still commenting on what's going on and still as right as he was 40 years ago. Talk a little bit about Ron Paul and like why you're going to his birthday and you know what.
Well, I owe everything I do right now to Congressman Paul, and it's not just Congressman Paul, but it's also Aaron Russo who made the film Freedom to Fascism.
Right.
Because it was in a theater in St. Charles, Illinois, where those Democrats are hiding out. So many years ago, I was in this theater. I saw the film, Aaron Russo was there. I see Ron Paul on the silver screen. And I was just like, holy cow, this is amazing. You know, and then I started working with Aaron Russo, and we were working with the Freedom to Fascism movement and the Restore the Republic movement, which then gave way to the Revolution PAC, which gave way to the next news network.
Right.
So all these things, excuse me. All these things are connected.
Yeah.
And, you know, being able to bring it full circle and, you know, I'm going to be giving a toast from the main stage on Saturday. And I'm so honored to be able to do that because I want to give back. I want him to know how much he's impacted me.
Right.
And it's not just him impacting me. It's everyone he's impacted. And it's like all the seeds he's planted. I mean, just going on those debates and what he was, I mean, the way he crafted his answers in those debates where everyone was watching in the United States, it was like, boom, dropping red pill after red. I mean, the way he could answer a question and explain it is just revolutionary beyond anything I can comprehend. So, I mean, so many people's lives were changed by Congressman Paul, and I'm just honored to be able to be there. We're going to be live streaming the event on Saturday. We'll be doing a simulcast on YouTube, and I'm excited to be there, man.
Yeah, people need to tune in. It's going to be a ton of great speeches from. I mean, everybody's going to be there. I'm going to be there as well, so I'm super excited for that. And you know, just the fact that he was so far ahead of the curve, and he set the table for all of this, and he you know just came out swinging. And it's almost like you watch those old clips. And as much as it gives you goosebumps watching him, you know, just understand the future better than anybody else. That's one thing. But what really hits you is when he gets booed by the crowd and you go, how were we so wrong? How is everybody else so wrong and so off the mark? And thank God we've moved away from that. I mean, we're still in the land of deceit,
well,
right?
But I remember,
it's amazing.
I remember when I went to CPAC, my first time ever going to CPAC, Donald Trump showed up, right? This was, I think, it must have been around 2008 or so. And Donald Trump shows up and he goes on stage. And this is when Ron Paul was still, the straw poll was going on. And I remember him going up and he's like, Ron Paul doesn't have a chance. I'm like, how dare you say that? You know, I'll never forget that moment. But yeah, I mean, being able to be at that event on Saturday, you know, surrounded by so many luminaries of his time is going to be one of the honors of my life.
Well, and Ron Paul is just, he's sort of this remnant of the classic Americana. These are the guys that are supposed to be in office. We're not supposed to have these lifetime appointments where people go from, you know, majoring in theater to a senator, and then they're there for 50 years. Ron Paul is like the perfect example of a guy who, I mean, what number of people in his constituency did he hand deliver, right? He delivered babies, right? So it's like he is a patriarch of these people. He, worked in the community. He's a veteran, but he, you know, was an established leader of his community already. That's the guy you elect to go to Congress. He's already successful. He doesn't have anything to prove. He can speak out. He can be totally independent because he's got the loyalty of his constituency. That's what America is supposed to be. That is how this republic is supposed to be run. And it's just such stark difference between him and the likes of, you know, what a time, Jasmine Crockett or whatever. And it's like blasphemy to even say their two names in the same sentence. But he just represents this old school, true Americana that I'm glad is still with us, but is going away.
Well, what's interesting is that, you know, his message has stuck with me for so long. And as you know, I'm White House correspondent, and I've had the opportunity to ask questions of the administration, even President Trump himself. But I had one mission that I wanted to fulfill, and that was I wanted to ask the Treasury Secretary about the illegal application of the income tax.
Right.
And after, like, there was one week we were at the White House, and they don't normally do this, but this week they did. If you recall, remember when they had all those signs with all the people that the illegals they had taken in?
Yeah, sure.
So it was that week. They were doing press briefings at 8 o'clock in the morning. They did three that week, which was actually quite unusual because they're usually about 1 o'clock midweek, maybe Tuesday. So you got to get into the White House briefing room, and being not an assigned member in one of those special seats, I have to go there and make sure that I stand in the wings of that room and stay there. So right. I was getting to the White House like 6:45 in the morning, holding my spot until 8 o'clock when the press briefing would begin. So I was there for, you know, Stephen Miller, Treasury Secretary Bessent, Border Czar Tom Homan. But the day that the Treasury Secretary was there, I was right there. Like, I wasn't much further than we are, standing there on the side. So I'm standing there waiting for my question, never get it. The day goes on. The days of the White House are long. Your feet are killing you. You're standing up. You know, you're chasing. You hear the whispers in the room. That's actually one of the cool things, is you hear all the reporters. You hear, like, you know, Peter Ducey or Caitlin Collins, and you hear everybody talking in the press corps. It's a remarkable experience, especially when there's something brewing.
Right.
You know, like if somebody's about to be fired, you hear Rubio's this or that, you hear the names, and it's it's just an amazing experience because you're right there as the news is percolating.
Right,
in the very
right.
seat of power. So that day I had, you know, I'd done my news, I had done my hits, and I decided that I was going to just leave. And as I'm leaving, I see one of my friends who I've made, you know, you make some great relationships while you're there from other media outlets. You become allies. You realize who you can trust and who you can talk to. I wave goodbye to my friend and move along. But I pointed out to him, I said, hey, there's going to be a gaggle. I can see something's going on. You want to come down and get this. Because the gaggles that occur at the White House are very, like, spontaneous.
Right.
You know, like you're just waiting around. You're standing in the sun. But you know when they go out to those green tents that they're eventually going to have to make their way back, and that's when you have the opportunity to ask the question. So in those instances, I've been able to ask Stephen Miller a number of questions. In fact, when J.B. Pritzker said that Republicans should know no peace the night before, I was able to ask Stephen Miller about Pritzker, and that made national news. Miller's response. So long story short, I'm leaving, and I see... I'm looking down. I can see who it is. I'm like, oh, it's the Treasury Secretary. It's Bessent. He's coming up. And
like a lion spotting a gazelle.
Yeah, I'm like, ha-ha, there he is. This is my moment. And I had all my gear packed up. I was ready to leave. And I just, you know, just pulled out my camera. And he comes walking up. Now, mind you, I had seen him at 8 o'clock that morning right in the front. So I was in front of him. He knew... suit, everything. He knew exactly who was standing there the whole time waiting to have a question. And he steps up, and you got to pounce. You got to be fast. You got to be loud, and you got to get that message out immediately. So I go ahead, and I immediately run into, you know, Treasury Secretary, a question. And I go into the question about, it was formulated in such a way where I could give him enough names so that he could bite onto those names, and then I could ask the question. So
this is about income tax.
This is about income tax.
Okay.
Now, if you recall, the IRS whistleblowers that had come forward, Shapley, and there was another one who had come forward, and now they have been appointed to roles in the Treasury. So with he and he appointed them to roles after they had been fired by the IRS. So I was able to ask, are these whistleblowers, now that they've been appointed to positions in Treasury, are they going to investigate what Congressman Ron Paul and filmmaker Aaron Russo have declared the illegal application of the income tax against American citizens? So it was a very pointed question,
right,
to be able to throw out the whistleblowers, bring in Russo and Paul, and ask the question about the IRS. Now, what was interesting was that Harrison Fields, who was handling the situation, he was the handler from the White House comms team, he tried to shut down the question. The rest of the media who were there, because the question admittedly did get a little long-winded, and I'm like holding my phone, reading the questions, and I'm like kind of shaking, and I'm like trying to get it out, and I got this foreign media going, hurry up, get it over with, and Harrison starts going, wait a second, okay, shut it down, we don't want to ask this question, because I'm starting to talk about the illegal application of the income tax.
Right.
And then... And then all of a sudden, the Treasury Secretary, he goes, no. I want to answer this.
Really?
I'm like, yeah, let's go. And of course, he didn't truly address the illegal application of the income tax, but he did bite on the part that I gave him about the whistleblowers and, you know, finding corruption within the organization.
Yeah.
So at least I got the answer.
Right.
It may not have been the answer I wanted, but, you know, that was one of the long missions I had. Was just to invoke Aaron Russo and Ron Paul's name on the White House grounds to the Treasury Secretary.
Absolutely.
Because those are the people who have impacted me.
Now, that's it represents a victory in and of itself, that you're there on the White House lawn as an independent media. I mean, that in and of itself is a victory in this war that Ron Paul's been fighting for his entire life and that we've been fighting. It's like you're Hannibal. You're outside of Rome. We haven't ended the Fed yet, but Lord, we've never been this close. How many times has the Secretary of Treasury been asked whether the income tax is legal or not in the history of America? I mean,
never.
Things are changing so fast. What is that like being a White House correspondent as a dissident right wing figure in the new media? I mean, you're the worst of the worst, man. How do they put up with you?
Well, what's interesting is, you know, in my first couple of weeks there, they don't give you a handbook. There's no, right, like, orientation session. I mean, my first day there, I didn't even know where to stand. And I got, you know, the color guard walking down, you know, walking down Pebble Road. And the military is planting flags of all 50 states. The Prime Minister of India is about to show up. And my wife and I get separated. I don't even know where the press room door is. And all of a sudden... like, I'm standing in the street, and the color guard's walking at me, and I'm like, holy cow. And then I got the White House going, you can't stand there. You got to move over here. I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's a madhouse.
And then there's moments where you have to compete with, like, the pool, right?
Right.
These guys.
The establishment.
The establishment. They've been there forever. And when you are the new face, they know it. Like, I've never seen this guy here before. Oh, but he's got a freaking hard pass. So,
every time people talk about it, it sounds like high school.
It really is.
It sounds like high school to me.
You know, okay.
The cliques, the cool kids, the popular kids.
Well, it's cutthroat, it's super competitive, and there's a pecking order.
Right.
So, for example, when you're going out to cover Marine One arrival or departure, the palm room doors open up, and then what happens is the different media pool, like TV goes out, photographers go out, radio goes out. So they all go out in stages,
okay,
and they get first dibs on location. And then reporters go out who are non-pool, and it's literally like a herd.
Right.
And you're running out to try to plant your flag and hold your position, and you're literally...
All the guests, dozens of them that have taken it, within 45 minutes to an hour, have varying degrees from extreme energy and feeling really great, to fog lifting, to just over the top crying and feel so good. Cleans out the cells, just does incredible things. RFK Jr. loves it. We've got the strongest ultra wrestling blue. But he's going on Owen in about 30 minutes. My show just ended and I forgot to do this. Don't forget when he's on Owen to tell us what he felt. And if he doesn't feel it, we'll put that out. So start going to take a half dropper or so, that's about a half dose. And then go ahead and shut that down. And then we're going to find out what happens to you. We'll see. Most people, it hits within about 30 minutes, starts peaking after a couple hours. But just tell people what you think. And if you don't feel it, we're going to tell everybody.
20 minutes later.
I can feel a definite, like an energy spike. Yeah, it feels pretty good.
What are you going to do now that you have your energy spike?
I'm going to see if it has a crash.
I've never heard of a crash.
Yeah, apparently it doesn't. But yeah, it feels pretty good. Yeah, definitely I feel sharper.
Okay.
Yeah, because I was pretty tired coming in here.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was.
Well, you're running around Texas right now. You're dealing with some other issues here.
I was driving all over Texas giving speeches for True Texas Project.
So did he give you the drink or the capsules?
I took the drink, but I got a bottle of each, and I'm going to go and do a longer-term test. We'll see how it goes.
Okay.
Yeah, I do feel kind of amped right now. Yeah.
Several weeks later.
You just saw an ad for Methylene Blue. You were here a few weeks ago. And I do this with every guest, more than 50 of them now. Every person has had clarity, energy, a fog lift is the most common. But what's really good is the long-term effects for your stamina, your energy, your libido, your how hard you can work out. It's amazing. So I had forgotten when he was coming in, we gave him a bottle because he loved it.
Almost gone.
I had forgotten to ask you if you listened and did it long-term. So just briefly, tell people the short-term effect and then now a few weeks later, the long-term effect.
Yeah, it gives you a good energy boost. I use it before I work out. So if I'm going to be doing kettlebell workouts, like I do some Methylene Blue about a half hour before, and it just gives you mental focus. I don't crash afterwards. That's good stuff. I need some more.
Well, give me some. How fast did it kick in?
About 15, 20 minutes. I'll take about a half hour before my workout.
And then you're saying you're almost out of the bottle. Was that 3 weeks ago, a month ago?
Something like that. You gave me the liquid and the pills, too.
You're almost out of buff.
Yeah, I'm almost out of buff.
Oh, my goodness. Well, all right. I'll give you more. Right. For the audience, we can't give it to everybody. We need your support at thealtersword.com. For me personally, the first week I got on it, now 4 or 5 months ago, I actually started to hurt myself because the workouts were so crazy. My trainer goes, dude, what's going on? Like 3 days into it. I go, I don't know. I was like lifting way more, going way harder. And then I got really exhausted after about a week because the same thing happened to Rob Dew, who's a great long-distance, bike rider. So he's quite the athlete. He said he was biking so hard up hills and stuff that he actually had to pull over because, his heart was going crazy. I mean, this stuff's wild.
Yeah, it's good. I like it better than doing like a 5-hour energy shot because those will make you crash afterwards. This doesn't have the crash.
So you've had no crash.
Right.
It's not a stimulant. It just skips the oxidation process somehow.
So I've been using it while I'm out there doing search and rescue. While I'm almost out.
You're saying you love it for working out. Has it gotten better over time, or what long-term thing have you felt, or if nothing?
I think just the main thing is it gives me a better workout, and that has good results over time. Yeah, for sure.
That's what I found without even knowing.
Yeah.
And then O'Keefe's like, it made my vision better, and Rob Dew goes, we have a bunch of callers already saying that. Did you see these studies about it, like curing glaucoma? And I'm not going to say we're not selling this a drug. I'm not saying it's going to do that. I'm like, God, this stuff's crazy. No, they don't want you to know about it. It's like ivermectin.
Right, exactly. Old school stuff.
But you can't take it if you're on SSRIs. And folks, it's so strong. Talk to your doctor first because it's not a game. Ours is really strong. If you'll just try it, you'll be hooked. And we can fund the operation. It's a win-win. We'll be right back with Stuart Rhodes.
Times I was there, I had set up a tripod and my camera on a gimbal off to the side of the room, and this guy comes up walking up to me and he goes, you can't put that here. WHCA just said you can't have this here, White House Correspondents Association. And I'm like, oh, okay. So then I just packed up my tripod and I just held it, okay, now I gotta hold it, whatever. I'll make do. And then afterwards I went up to him and I say, hey, I really appreciate the tip. I'm new here, but I appreciate your help. That's all you could do, right?
Right.
There's been moments where, you're running out and like when the pool goes in, like they think that they have this sacred location, like in the East Room when there's a bill signing or something like that. Like you have to maneuver like past these stage areas that are, you wouldn't know otherwise.
Right.
But if you, like, whenever I saw Caitlin Collins, I go, hey, Caitlin, I'm going wherever you go, right? Because I'm like, she's in the pool. I'm just going to go wherever you go because know you know where you're going.
Right. She's got the hookup. She's got somebody on the inside telling her exactly where to be.
I'm following you, Caitlin. And I just tell her, like, straight to her face,
That's funny.
But even at NATO, like, that was a whole experience in itself. And
Yeah, because you're traveling with the president. I mean, being a White House correspondent doesn't just mean you're in the White House. You travel when they travel.
Yeah, I was staying in the hotel that the White House had literally commandeered the entire hotel.
Right.
We stayed in this place.
So cool.
And you know, we were on these massive coach buses being transported to The Hague from the hotel. You know, and like Peter Ducey and Caitlin Collins are hanging out in the restaurant bar, and like no one from the public is allowed. It's like lockdown, Secret Service everywhere. It's an experience, man.
That sounds awesome, actually. Frankly, that sounds amazing. Again, if you're just joining us, this is Gary Franchi. He runs Next News Network. He's the chief White House correspondent. He founded Next News Network. You can follow them on YouTube and Rumble and a number of other sources at Next News Network. And, of course, follow him on X at Gary Franchi. And, again, it's just sort of serendipitous that you were passing through on the way to Ron Paul's birthday. Full disclosure, we're pre-recording this on Thursday. Tomorrow, on Friday, I'm going to play a bunch of videos of Ron Paul just to celebrate his legacy. But I also wanted to have you on because just this week, you happened to break a giant story that we were following here, which was the runaway scrape, the Democrats fleeing the state of Texas because they were going to lose a vote. So they decided to flip the border, take their ball and go home. And they were hiding out. Well, you tell me the story. So these Democrats flee. Nobody knows where they go, where they are. John Cornyn's calling the FBI. They're, you know, everybody's scrambling. How did you locate him? You found him. Where were they? How'd you find him?
Right. So what happened on Sunday night, my good friend Chad called me up and he's like, hey, man, we just got a tip. And we believe that the Democrats are over at the Q Center. And I said, okay, well, you know, what do you want to do? He's like, do you have a drone? Can we go over there? So Chad decided to go over there and do some recon. Now, how did Chad find out? Chad found out because Mark Vargas of the Illinois Review got a tip from some grassroots folks. And I'm not sure exactly where that came from. Apparently, there was a chat session or some kind of thread. People were talking. So the Q Center it's a convention center and hotel that is like, you can lock this place down. It's a
right.
Perfect location. And it's also a Hilton property. It's a Pritzker property. So obviously he's the governor. He can just say, you know, open up the Q Center. So maybe somebody at the Q Center, housekeeping or something, like sends a message. Hey, I, these guys are here.
Well, it had to be a big operation. I mean, these are Democrat operatives and senators, congressmen. I mean, there's a lot of people involved in this.
So you have 50 plus representatives and their support staff.
You're right.
So it's not something small. You know, you've got congressional members like Jasmine Crockett and Al Green who are there too. So what happens is Vargas gets the tip. And he contacts Chad. Chad goes over and does recon, sees the place lit up like a Christmas tree in the middle of the night.
Right.
Now, normally, when you drive by this place, it's dark.
Right.
It's nothing going on. Well, Chad's like, they're there. Right?
Yeah.
So I get in touch with Vargas the next morning, and I'm like, listen, this place is 5 minutes from where I live. I'm going to go there myself, and I'm going to investigate. So what did I do? I got in my car and I drove right to the front security gate. And I said, hi, I'm Gary Franchi. I'm a White House correspondent. I'm here to interview Jasmine Crockett. We have an interview. Can you let me in? And he's like, what's your name? He goes through the whole thing. And the security guard comes walking up as he's talking to me. And he's holding the security manifest. He flips the page to page two, and all I see is representative, representative, representative.
Right.
I see every single freaking name that is listed on the security manifest. And then he goes, makes a phone call, and he, you know, what's your name? We go back and forth for a minute. And eventually I say, well, listen, I saw her name on the list. He says, yes, I know, but you're not allowed in.
Right.
I'm like, thank you. The verbal confirmation.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, all right. And so he let me go through. I had to make a U-turn, and then I filmed the stand-up right in front of the building. And as I'm filming the stand-up, so while I was talking, there was a white bus that departed. And it was all the Democrats on that bus going to a protest. We knew they had a protest in Aurora, Illinois that day. And since they were staying at the Q Center, the white bus carrying them out to that location. So it was like perfect opportunity. I'm standing there doing my report and the freaking bus goes past. And I had a feeling because I saw the bus enter. And I'm going, that's got to be, they're leaving soon. So I set up a second camera, pointed it at the guard shack exit, and waited, and sure enough, that thing came out. I got a second angle of it, and that's what we posted on X.
You did like real journalism. I mean, this sounds like real journalism.
It was awesome. It was fun. It
sounds very fun. Yeah. And I mean, they were literally hiding out. I mean,
yes.
This was not a public thing. Oh, we're all going to the Q Center. I mean, the latest story, and this is just from earlier today, the FBI will help locate Texas Democrats who fled the state court, and says the FBI has agreed to cooperate with Texas state law enforcement to locate the 50 Democratic legislators who left the state to avoid a vote on redistricting. So, I mean, they got the FBI hunting them down. Gary Franchi finds him down the street. When it was the Q Center, I was like, "What? Oh no! Oh no!
Yeah,
what
no,
is
man.
This about?"
Yeah,
QAnon strikes back.
Yeah, everyone's remarking in the comments, like, "Is this really happening? Is this a movie? Like, is this what?"
Well, the whole thing.
what's interesting too is, like, when you start doing a deeper dive, you recognize who's there, and then these Democrats who are they're posting videos on X.
Right.
And
I saw that. Yeah.
And they're saying, I'm defecting. I'm not doing it. We're standing up for the people. And I looked at the brickwork behind this woman who was speaking. I go, damn it. I know that brickwork. And I just literally like typed in, Q Center photographs. And I took a closer look. I'm like, there's the brickwork. There's the line. I can see it. She's standing right here in the shot. You know, like, she gave away the look. I mean, you'd have to know.
Yeah.
But I'm like, there she is. She's making a video in like the green, whatever.
The courtyard. Sorry.
The Q Center.
That's so funny. Yeah. And I saw that post, and you lined up. You go, look, here's the background she's using.
Yeah.
And I mean, this whole story is crazy. The whole story is insane.
Yeah.
And, you know, I guess it's typical, but, and it's like I say it so much, it's just a cliche at this point. But I mean, everything they do, they accuse you of doing. I mean, they basically they were going to lose a vote, so they all decided to leave anyway. So now there's a bunch of Texans who aren't getting emergency supplies right. because they're refusing to approve it because they were going to lose this vote, and so they just took their ball and go home. I mean, a literal betrayal of democracy, abandoning their post.
We find out this morning that there's bomb threats.
Right.
And they had to evacuate the facility. Over 400 people had to be evacuated from the facility. I reached out to a source. And they confirmed that the bomb threat that came in was from an anonymous email.
Right.
And there was nothing to it. The place was swept. They didn't find anything. But just goes to show. I mean, they could have set up that email themselves.
Right.
You know, just to make themselves look like the victim. And, you know, some MAGA calls in a bomb threat.
Yeah.
You know, so it could have been a total false flag. It could have been someone irate from Texas.
Yeah.
You know, like, wanting them to come home. But they're hiding out. We'll wait and see what happens. They did file the arrest warrants. They could go up there. And I did consult with some law enforcement in Illinois. They said that there's not an Illinois law enforcement agency that would go in to enforce these warrants under any conditions.
Right. Well, is that, do you think, because Pritzker? I mean, that's I'm sure
really
that's an order
political.
From on high, right?
It's political, and it's also hard to enforce, in their mind, I guess, hard to enforce the jurisdictional application of the warrant that's from Texas. But I argue, you know, if you got a warrant, you know, like if you have a warrant from another state, you should be able to just be taken in. I mean,
yeah.
You know how it works.
Well, there's a weird extradition between states. I mean, but this is the problem though, isn't it? It's like, I don't want to live in a country where the representatives are being arrested by the police. Like, why do they keep making us do this to them? Like, that's my frustration. Is, you know, the judges that are interfering and you know, putting injunctions on everything Trump's doing. It's like, okay, you're leaving us with the option of either we got to just always lose to you because you're always going to do an indictment or an injunction and you're going to stop everything, or we got to like get rid of judicial review. I don't like that option because then you're setting up a dictatorship. So it's like, just stop interfering constantly. Stop breaking the law. Stop just, you know, trying to you know, game the system like this, and we could all just get along. But it's like they're acting in a way that almost is forcing, you know, our government. We got people going up, you know, representatives saying, I'm Guatemalan before I'm American. Like, what are we supposed to do
with
this?
Who are we representing here?
Yeah. So, you know, part of me is like, well, to me, the government should kick her out. But then it's like, all right, do we want a government that has the final say, or should the people be the final say? But if the people are voting or electing somebody who...
Well, I think it does come down to loyalty.
Yeah.
You know, if your loyalty is to Somalia, but you're a representative in Minnesota, then maybe, you know, like, there should be some kind of question here.
You would think.
You know, but...
But then
But then you go on and you marry your brother, and that's a whole other story.
Yeah, well, and she's not the only one either. I mean, yeah. And that was a frustrating thing. I was going on this big rant about it because there was a video of a Somali representative from Maine, talking about how she was in the government to benefit Somalia.
I remember that. Yeah.
And I'm going off about it. And then the crew pulls up her district. It's 90% white Anglo-Saxon Protestant. So it's like, I can kind of understand it if you have a congressional district that's all Somalians and they all vote for the Somali woman. But it's like, what are we doing here, guys? You're voting for some woman that is literally telling you I'm more loyal to my home country than your country. And you're saying, yeah. You're going, yay. Yes. What? It's crazy. It's so bizarre. But, the point is the Democrats are just, they're out of control, man. They won't stop. They're being insane. And it's like Republicans are going to have to start taking extreme measures just to rein them in.
Well, I mean, let's just get right down to it. It's time for arrests. It's time for real arrests. You know, we need with what Kash Patel and Bongino and Tulsi Gabbard have uncovered, from those burn bags is remarkable. You know, we're now seeing the actual paper trail, the language, the people behind it, the architects, the Julia Smith, who was actually whispering in Hillary's ear, and Hillary goes on and says, yeah, I like this plan. Let's execute the plan. The plan gets to Obama. The plan's carried out by Comey and Clapper and Brennan. So we know the whole chain of events here. So, and it is encouraging to see that Comer's coming out. And he's bringing Bill Clinton, he's bringing Hillary in front of his oversight committee. But is he bringing them to the oversight committee over the Epstein case? Or is it, is he still going to have the ability to ask him questions with respect to what they found in the burn bags? Because Hillary's implicated there.
Right.
Bill Clinton's implicated through the Epstein flight logs and other things that he was a part of. I mean, the corruption goes so massive.
Yeah.
But we need it.
We need arrest.
We need arrest.
Yeah.
I'm glad to hear a grand jury is about to convene. And that's the first step. But at the same time, my viewers are so freaking pissed. In the comments, they're like, nothing's going to happen. This is garbage. We don't care. Keep talking. Like, no. This is the moment. We have the ability to clean house. Donald Trump has put people in place that can actually execute the law as it is written and clean freaking house.
Yeah.
We need to do it. And if we don't do it, there is no country left.
Exactly. No. And that's the thing. It's like, if y'all think that you are, preserving these systems by not revealing the secrets, cause you think that, we gotta uphold the reputation of the FBI. Y'all don't understand. No. And this is the funny thing, being a right-wing media personality or whatever and seeing other people, it's like, you think that what we're saying extreme, go talk to the dude down the block. Go talk to your neighbor and ask him how he thinks, because he doesn't have to worry about the FCC. He doesn't have to worry about YouTube censorship. And people are pissed. People are very pissed. And they really want drastic action. So it's like, you have to deliver results. And I'm so sick of gathering evidence. I feel like we're waiting for like a serial killer to be tried, and they just every week come out with more evidence. And we're like, no, we know he's the killer. We know he's the guy.
Yeah.
You've got to try him and convict him now. Yeah. Enough with the evidence. It's been years of gathering evidence.
Well, I mean, if you go all the way back to the first Trump administration, Devin Nunes goes out in front of the cameras and he basically says, hey, we've got the evidence. It's right here. I remember when he came out and said it, he's got the smoking gun. And the whole administration just went on its way.
Yeah.
And then
he became a Fox News personality. He's like, what is happening
here? Like, wait, what's going on? Like, so now at least I think because Trump's in his second administration, here's something I want to say that I don't know if people are saying this that needs to be said, is that going to the origins of Russiagate, Obamagate, whatever you want to call it, where it started with Julia Smith, like I said, to Hillary, to Obama, and to the intelligence community. I draw the line directly to Butler and the assassination attempt on President Trump.
Mm.
Because I think that was really the last effort that they had to get rid of Trump.
Right.
I mean, we all saw what happened that day. The sloped roof, the loner kid, the burner phones, the crypto accounts overseas, we still don't have answers for. He's training in a facility, a gun range, known, intelligence people or law enforcement are there at the same time. So I truly believe that you can draw a line from Butler all the way back to Obamagate, and they lost. You know, yeah. God was on Trump's side, still is on Trump's side, still has his hand on him. But I think more people need to draw that line personally.
And that's really fascinating. I'll up you one, because I'd say there's also a very you know, thick and evident line between what you're talking about, the Obamagate and Russiagate, and the second assassination attempt with the Ukraine guy. Because remember, you know, the whole Russiagate collusion, there's a reason they chose Russia to be the country, because they're setting up, you know, the eventual war that they were planning, and they didn't want Trump to interfere with that. And then the whole first impeachment where he was trying to investigate Ukraine, you know, you see all these little bits, and what you see underneath is this long planned war with Russia, this long planned conflict with Russia that Trump kept almost, you know, disrupting. And really, this has been, you know, a key move that they've been trying to make for a long time is starting war with Russia to lead to World War III. And Trump really was a threat to all that. And so, you know, I think the line to the assassination attempts is a very evident and important
question.
One.
Without question, I think there's, you know, because, okay, Butler, they failed in Butler. Okay, we know this other guy, by the way, and he's got ties to this, and it'll line up perfectly. You know, let's just go ahead and send him out there and put him on the fence line. Thankfully, you know, that didn't, you know, God was intervening that day as well.
And I think that people like yourself, people like Alex Jones, people like myself to a lesser degree, but people who have been in this fight for like more than 10 years, I think have a different perspective on Trump. And I think a lot of the younger people are a lot more frustrated with Trump because they didn't spend 10 or 15 years before Trump ever arrived being totally hopeless. Trump arrives, it's like, oh my, here's the guy who's saying what we say. And so, I mean, do you think that affects how you interpret what Trump's doing? Obviously, there's a lot of, you know, heat on Trump right now, especially how he's dealing with Israel. Do you think that's fair? Do you think that's a distraction? It just seems to me like, again, myself, Alex Jones, yourself, see this in a longer timeline and don't quite get so worked up over some of Trump's missteps.
Well,
why do you think that is?
I mean, I think that if you want to talk missteps, first of all, you have to call it like you see it,
mm-hmm.
you know, and when that DOJ memo came out, and they're like, oh, there's nothing to see here with the Epstein thing. And then they released 10 hours of video, and there's like missing minutes of footage, clearly edited.
Such like, nonsense.
Man, whose idea was that, right? Like, they only added fuel to the fire. That was a huge, huge misstep. And I wouldn't relent. I saw, but what was funny is watching the media landscape and seeing the dominoes fall, right? So like Charlie Kirk comes out, he's like, oh, I'm not going to talk about it anymore.
You're right,
you know?
Right.
And then you have Dinesh D'Souza, I'm not going to talk about it anymore. Mark Levin comes out, I'm not going to talk about it anymore. And you're like, okay, they all got the phone call.
Yeah, you know? Literally, like, I think Charlie Kirk said, I got the phone call, right?
Yeah, like, and I'm like, you know what? Like, and I called out Charlie on X, you know? I'm like, dude, a week ago you were saying this, and now this? Come on, man.
Yeah.
Like, let's go, let's get some answers. You know, but that was a misstep. You got to call it like you see it. You got to hold the line. So, you know, but looking at the long history of things, I mean, you know, you have to have perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm thankful that Donald Trump has come forward and, you know, he has been a lightning rod for the establishment. You know, he's said the right things. He's done the right things. And he's woken up so many people. But again, I draw the line even back to Ron Paul, because without Ron Paul, you know, there wouldn't be no Donald Trump.
100%.
You know, you had the Ron Paul revolution. You had the Tea Party, even though it was co-opted by, you know, the establishment eventually. But the Fed movement and all these different things, the populist, this is the populist movement that has been growing and growing and growing and then found a home with Donald Trump. And now we are here.
Right. Right. And again, you know, I see a lot of young people, the Nick Fuentes types, that just go, Trump's co-opted. He's, you know, we just need to toss him aside. I mean, they want nothing to do with him. Whereas, like, you know, for those of us who have been watching for a while, it's like, no, he is still our guy. Like, we still need him very much to be our champion. He's still doing great things. Yes, there's some frustration there. And there's, you know, some long-term, you know, problems that we have to deal with when maybe what happens when Trump goes, you know, retires, who's going to follow up with him. But it's like, it's not an option. We got to support Trump while he's in office. What is the other option?
Well, now they're saying that, you know, obviously J.D. Vance would be the one to carry the mantle. I'm hearing, you know, they want Rubio to step up as the VP. I'm like, no, thank you. Like,
right.
I do not need like a Bushite Republican Rubio, you know, in that position. You know, in my opinion, I think if you want to keep this thing going, you want to keep the party going, you put Donald Trump Jr. as the VP nomination. You put Vance at the top of the ticket. You get a Trump-Vance ticket again, you know, and you're going to be able to carry this momentum forward. And I think that's really the only way to do it. You know, or maybe Eric or maybe someone else. But I personally think you put J.D. Vance, Donald Trump Jr. right there on the ticket. And I think you can keep this party going.
Yeah, I'm surprised that they haven't found something political for Don Jr. to do. It seems like that's sort of an oversight, because I would have expected by now he'd have some Congress seat or appointment.
Well, there were rumors.
I guess claims of nepotism. They don't want to appoint him to anything.
Well, there were rumors he was going to run for the governorship of, was it Montana or Wyoming? One of those states, I heard. But that was years ago. That never panned out. You'd think that he would try to position himself into something. But if all he needs is to be tapped to be the VP, and he doesn't have to have a political record that can be criticized, only his talking points, what are they going to do? Go to his Rumble channel and be like, you said this on Rumble. Like, I don't think anyone's going to care. They could pull all the clips from all the speeches.
I'm pretty sure Don Jr. has tried to sell me some sort of pink salt trick on Rumble.
Yeah.
He's on all the AI ads. But I remember seeing John Jr. really early on, like, I don't know, whenever he gave a speech at the Republican convention, I guess, in 2016. And hearing him speak for the first time, going, oh, wait, this guy's got chops. I mean, he's got very similar attitude, very similar presence to his father, maybe even a little bit more well-spoken than his dad, at least has a different style that's maybe a little bit more accessible than his dad. So, like, I remember in 2016 going, whoa, Don Jr.'s next, because, you know, he's got 5, 4 years, 8 years to work on his resume.
Yeah, look at, you know, John Adams, right?
Yeah,
and
his
son, you know, John Quincy Adams.
We've had some good dynasties. We've had some bad dynasties in this country.
What I'm saying is, like, you know, it's happened before.
It has. Absolutely.
So history can rhyme.
And it's not a small thing being there in the White House, seeing how it's run. I mean, I would think that would give you a leg up even more so than being a senator for however many years.
Sure.
Well,
Don Jr. is watching this right now, by the way.
Oh, yeah. How you doing? How you doing, Don? We're big fans here. Well, it's just incredibly exciting. What is next for Next News Network? Obviously, you're there in the White House, you know, and as long as they'll have you, as long as they can, you know, put up with you. What's next for Next News Network?
Well, right now, we actually just broke a story internationally regarding Cambodia.
Right.
And we received a news tip. Investigated it, found out there was a reporter in Cambodia. Like, a lot of people may not be paying attention, but they're, you know, they have a media infrastructure too.
Mm.
So a reporter comes out and says that he wants to have a highway named, like, the biggest highway in Cambodia named after Donald Trump. So
cool.
What did I do? Like, I found the guy's video. I put it up on my X account. You know, I amplified it. And then I reported on it the next day, amplified that. Next thing you know, like, the prime minister of Cambodia is coming out, and he's down.
Alex Jones has good genes. In fact, there's only one thing better than Alex's genes. Alex's genes on Methylene Blue. Just look at those pecs. That charm. The focus. Get your Methylene Blue now at thealexjonesstore.com and make good jeans great again.
For a limited time, you can get this limited edition Murdered Out InfoWars shirt at thealexjonesstore.com with the American flag on the shoulder. It's historic and it funds the operation. We've got other cool shirts that just came in as well. The new Liberty Bell 1776 Declaration of Independence shirt is out. It's limited edition and it's got my signature on the back. That really triggers libtards. And then there's this limited edition. I weaponized the American people. It was actually you weaponized them, and we're winning. Get it all now at thealexjonesstore.com. Thanks for your support.
It's almost poetic, the products that we sell, because yes, they are the best. Yes, it is the best price for the highest quality. Yes, they are third-party tested. It's almost poetic because as we advocate for humanity, what we sell to you is that which makes you or allows you to make yourself a better version of yourself. Whether it's getting the Methylene Blue, which helps you with focus and energy and mental clarity, or Ultimate Life Force, which makes your body healthier in so many ways I don't have the time to explain to you. Whether it's the Shilajit that gives you incredible vitality, or the Ultimate Burn, which ensures that your metabolism is optimal.
or the optimal human, which is everything the body needs. You see, we're fighting for your mind, your body, and your soul, not just with the products that we sell, but with the message of this network. We have to have the truth. We have to have freedom of speech. We have to have our rights, because, folks, we're about ready to go into an artificial intelligence war, into a space war, the likes of which humanity couldn't even dream of, even in science fiction. So please go to thealexjonesstore.com right now, not just for your mind and your body, but for your species.